Hey, Mike.
Michelle, you should always keep your cool, like a cold-blooded assassin. Don't worry about your sound check.
I always worry about my sound check.
I don't want you flipping out on me and ruining your reputation.
That was pretty bad.
You actually sound pretty good.
Does it sound okay?
Yeah, do you always do a sound check before every podcast?
Yes, before every podcast.
Because of past podcasting horrors?
Because of past podcasting horrors, and also because sometimes there's like this ambient noise, and I just want to make sure that the sound... I have never been one of these sound people. That stuff's never bothered me so much. But since we've been doing this, and particularly since I've been the one having to fiddle with the sound, like on my end, I am so particular about it. You can't tell by the podcast, but I really do try my best to get the sound good. It makes all the difference in the world when you're listening to somebody, you know?
Well, when you got poltergeists in your house, doing sound checks isn't going to cover anything.
It's really frustrating when you change it on Skype and no one's been on your desktop. The desktop's been turned off and you come back the next day and it's changed back. Weird stuff like that happens. I don't know what it is.
Mysterious. All right, Michelle, well, we're here to do Better Call Saul on West Coast Project. This is 305 Chicanery.
Yep.
Michelle, I gave a crappy definition of that word last time.
Did you?
Chicanery is the use of trickery to achieve a political, financial, or legal purpose. An underhanded person who schemes corruption and political chicanery behind closed doors.
Yep. That's what I got.
I forgot what I said, but it was... Hackish. It wasn't as clear as Wikipedia delivers.
Yeah, it's foolishness to better your position, kind of.
Yeah, it's chicanerious to try to say something when you don't know what you're talking about.
It sure is.
Michelle, did you know that Daniel Sackheim directed this episode and The Leftovers this week?
Oh, I did not. You know what? I've only watched episode one of The Leftovers. I have had zero TV. I know. I've only watched episode one. We did watch a movie this weekend just to, like, veg out in front of something, you know, just, like, something for a couple hours. We haven't done that in... I mean, it's been forever. Our middle daughter, Julia, is getting married Saturday. So it has just been... insane. And they closed on their house today. So they bought a house today. They're getting married Saturday. So lots of
congratulations.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, but kind of sad and kind of sweet and kind of everything. And, you know, but it's been really, really busy. So yeah, I haven't even had a chance to watch any of those. I'm hoping to binge watch them. We're on like what, four now of Leftovers?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so that guy directed both of those, and we saw Lavelle Crawford again, Huel. Skinny Huel.
Yep. So they're saying Huel gained some weight after this, but we get to see him in his actual post-weight situation.
Right, I guess Huel gained weight, but Lavelle Crawford lost weight.
It's pretty cool.
100 pounds, more than 100 pounds. And I guess we find out, this is our podcast for Better Call Saul, so it's full of spoilers, so we don't really have any order or protection from them, so just talk about anything and everything. So I guess we saw what that mysterious page that Mike pulled out of Chuck's office was by this episode, right? It's Rebecca's address.
Yes. There was that. And we also saw what Mike was photographing and why.
Do you think, Michelle, do you think a calmer Chuck could have reconciled with Rebecca? Do you think there's any chance of them reconciling?
Now?
No, not now, but before the courtroom.
Yeah, maybe, sure. I mean, I was going to ask you about that anyway. Why did they split up?
I don't think we really know that. We know a lot about Chuck, so maybe that's enough to know why. But
well, yeah. So exactly what does Rebecca do? I know she's on tour.
I think she's like a cellist.
Okay.
She's some sort of musician, I think.
Okay.
Violinist. I can't remember what she does, but.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay, I wasn't sure about that. The beginning of this episode reminded me of an older Better Call Saul, where we saw Chuck and Rebecca having dinner, and they were talking about Jimmy, and I can't remember the context of it. Do you remember that? At first, I thought it was...
Yeah. So I got some of these dates corralled. I kind of figured some of this out. So the very first Better Call Saul episode is about... I think it's 2002. It's like the spring of 2002.
Okay.
And in 2001, Chuck left HHM for this illness that he has. So that was before the pilot.
Okay.
And then the dinner that they have in this episode, which is a flashback with Rebecca, is somewhere later in 2001. So it's after Chuck left for his illness, but before the pilot. So they flash back to before the pilot in this dinner with Rebecca.
Okay, how do we know it's before the pilot? I'm just curious, because in the whole first episode, he was pretty much taking care of Chuck. And I'm trying to remember, because I think that at that dinner, the before dinner, they were talking about Jimmy, right?
And yeah, that was way, way, way back. I think that was like 1990 when Jimmy first started at HHM. They were kind of celebrating Jimmy getting the job.
The job in the mailroom or the job? Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I couldn't remember. And I didn't even, I didn't really have anything to fall back on with that to find out. But okay. Well, that makes more sense then.
It was pretty interesting, though, to see Jimmy as Chuck's wingman, right? He's kind of helping him lie to Rebecca to make Chuck look better to Rebecca.
Yeah, I don't see Jimmy ever doing anything, hardly, that's not in Chuck's best interest. Really.
Well, carving up documents and changing dates that makes him look like an ass wasn't a good
thing. Okay, well, obviously, right. That was not in Chuck's best interest. But, yeah, you're right with that. But everything that you see, the interaction between him and Chuck, and the things that he does for him and is willing to do for him, and even the things he says to him and everything, just feels very genuine, and it feels very one-sided to me.
Yeah, it does flow one way. Chuck's a pretty good stickler for the law, and Jimmy's actually a pretty good brother. So, Michelle, what would you do if a family member... This is putting on the spot a little bit, but what would you do if a family member of yours broke the law? Would you tell the law on them like Chuck does on Jimmy, or would you cover up for them?
Okay, well, I don't know that Jimmy did anything, like Chuck doesn't know what Jimmy did, right? I mean, he doesn't know. He doesn't know he did that. He just thinks he did that because he thinks he's too smart. Now, Jimmy breaking into his house and tearing up that tape, that's more like a personal thing between two people. I don't know that feels certainly more vindictive, calling the law, than he doesn't mean that when he's saying that in this whole, the reason I had to do this was because the law is so important. He doesn't mean that. This is nothing but...
Right,
work.
He's talking about the profession of being a lawyer in the law. But what about Jimmy doing the Cleveland sunroof or whatever he did when he pooped through the sunroof in front of the kids and stuff? I mean, that's pretty bad. Jimmy kind of Chuck kind of covered him up, covered up and helped him out of that mess.
Well, did he? I mean, he represented him, right? Jimmy still got in trouble.
Yeah, he got him out of trouble and got him the job and. I don't know. I'm no apologist for Chuck for sure, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like as long as Jimmy is beneath Chuck, that Chuck is happy. Right? As long as he's, I don't know. I mean, we saw in this episode, everything about Chuck goes back to childhood and how obviously Jimmy was the favored one.
More liked, yeah. Better liked.
Yeah. And because of that, he has harbored this resentment. And as long as he sees Jimmy as being the goof off and the bad seed and, you know, whatever, then he's okay with him. But as soon as Jimmy gets any kind of notoriety at all, then, of course, you know, he's not anymore. And particularly now when, like, the scales have shifted, you know, the seesaws went the other way. Because now Chuck's kind of down because of his illness, and Jimmy is doing okay. But, I mean, you know, at the same time, you can't help but waffle a little bit, right? Because Jimmy does skirt right on the very edge of the law and crosses.
Yeah, Jimmy's a criminal. He altered document, legal document. That's like lying under testimony.
That's obviously bad. I'm just talking about in general, everything he seems to do, like going into that military place to make those photos and lying over who was there to make the commercial. Everything he does just borderlines criminal activity. So you can imagine how to somebody like Chuck, who's probably lived his whole life on the up and up, and he's so freaking uptight, that for Jimmy to like come skating in with all of his shenanigans, that it would feel unfair, particularly based upon their childhood, where Jimmy just seemed to skate through everything.
Well, Jimmy's treading on the sacred ground of Chuck's lover, which is the law. You know, Chuck's really only relationship he ever has is the law. It's like you got no friends or anything. That's what he
see. Yeah, but I don't even believe that. I don't believe Chuck really cares about the law that much. I think that he likes it because he can use it to his advantage.
You think it's an ego thing mostly for Chuck then, that he doesn't want Jimmy coming close to his level of status in life?
Yes, that's all. Exactly how I feel about it. I feel like that it's insulting to him that Jimmy could possibly rise to anything close to where Chuck is after Chuck has been on the straight and narrow so long and Jimmy has obviously not.
Right. All right, well, so this is the one where I do the recap, right?
Yep.
I'm doing so many crazy switcheroo podcasts, can't even remember my role anymore, Michelle.
I understand.
All right, well, they start out in the flashback, and this is the visit by Rebecca, but they're getting Chuck's yard all spruced up and getting ready for the Rebecca reunion. And it's essentially to fool Rebecca. I think Chuck has put appliances in, and he's got candles everywhere, and he's going to lie about how the phone or how the or they get the phone, fake phone, or the phone without power. And they're going to lie about how the power company got a mix-up on the power bill on the wrong address.
Yep.
All that good stuff, just like Jimmy did with the address with the Mesa Verde. That was pretty funny.
It was good, wasn't it? Because that was one of the things that they were talking about. He said the power company, the guys over at 215 haven't paid their power bill, and we all know I'm at 512. So that was a good little nod to everything that we're discussing now.
What did you get out of Chuck wanting to know whether or not he should take off his wedding ring from the very person who he's essentially got the wedding ring for?
I thought that was very sad. I thought that was just very telling to how much this relationship with Rebecca meant to him, and the fact that he did not want to not be in this relationship with her.
Why wouldn't you want to just leave the wedding ring on, though? It's her and his wedding, right? The wedding ring for them together.
Sure, but they're divorced.
Yeah, but wouldn't it look sweet if he was wearing it, or does it look too needy?
I don't think so. Yeah, it looks very needy. Very needy and very kind of, you know. Yeah, I don't like it.
All right, what about cooking sea bass? Kick his ass, sea bass. Didn't they have sea bass in the 1992 dinner too with Jimmy?
That's probably like Chuck's dish, right? You know how guys are taught like to, you know, cook like one or two dishes to impress women. I think you're right though.
Isn't it Gus Fring's dish too? He cooks some Chilean soup with Walt.
Ooh, that's good. I remember something like that. Yeah.
All right, well, they meet Chuck and Rebecca. They meet with Jimmy there. And so I guess we're left to wonder if Rebecca caused Chuck's illness or his psychosomaticness of that illness. They don't really make that perfectly clear.
Oh, I thought it was perfectly clear.
You think
clear.
That's why he's freaked out because he lost to Rebecca?
Yes. I think that, you know, the vision I get with Chuck is like he's so on the straight and narrow. You know, when you do everything right in your life and everything kind of goes according to plan and then something messes up, it shows your lack of ability to handle that. Maybe it was his fault. Maybe it wasn't. Like I said, we don't really, you know what happened between him and Rebecca. So, I don't.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't really know if I understand that. We have to assume that they were married for a little while, right? I mean, this wasn't just a quick relationship at their age. You would certainly picture that they'd been married for a while. I mean, I don't know why I think that. But I don't really understand this amicable of a divorce, right? Where you're still coming over and having dinner and all that kind of stuff.
They seemed pretty good together in that first flashback way back whenever we saw it with Jimmy or about Jimmy.
They seemed pretty good this time, didn't they? I mean, they were reminiscing and everything seemed fine.
I guess so, yeah. I guess so.
Until, of course, Chuck lost his mind.
Rebecca gets a call on her cell phone. And that's a no-no in Chuck's house. Michelle, you can't have that cell phone. He, slaps it out of her hand. Didn't we see that in Fargo in season one when Don Shrumps got the little guy, your father? He got that bitch pleased slap out of his hand by Melba. That's where we came up with the term, isn't it? We stole that from Fargo Talks Fargo.
Did we?
Yeah. They came up with it, and I stole it from them. Bitch please, he slaps the look, I'm your father, the voice-changing thing.
I was thinking it was Louie for some reason, Louis C.K.
No, it was that. It was Don Chump making fun with Malvo's voice changing thing.
Okay, you're right.
Anyway, they're pretty, maybe I sensed a little bit of false politeness to one another, but they were pretty friendly.
I thought maybe at first, like you would be, you know, it takes different people different amounts of time to warm up, you know, like I'm a real slow warm up type of person. When I'm around people, it takes me a couple days, literally, before I feel comfortable around somebody and before I'm like myself and stuff. So, and that goes with like anybody, you know, that I haven't been around for a while, family or anything, you know, you just got to kind of loosen up. And some people, I guess it takes longer. But yeah, I did notice that at the beginning of this. But once they started talking and they started reminiscing about, you know, old trips that they had taken and stuff like that, it seemed real natural and really nice. And it really made you wonder what happened to split these two up that affected Chuck so much.
Well, with the cell phone incident, that was, they became falsely polite after that.
Barely falsely polite. Yeah. I mean, she was not even happy with that at all. I mean, who would be?
And when she's gone, Jimmy says, just tell her, dude. She'll understand. She likes you. She cares about you. Just tell her. But Chuck's very adamant about not letting on that he has this problem.
Okay, did you believe his reason for that when he mentioned it later?
What do you mean his reason for it?
Well, he said that he didn't want her to know because he didn't want her to think less of him. Do you think that's the reason?
Yeah, I don't think Chuck wants anybody to think less of him. Certainly Jimmy, you know, the court, all his colleagues in court, Howard, everybody.
Yeah, but I think all of those people are secondary to Rebecca.
Oh, sure. And
yeah, I don't know if I don't know if that's the reason he didn't want to tell her. That it just, I mean, did he think he was just going to get better? Remember they were talking about she was going to come back. He was like, you know, well, what's your plan next? And she's talking about she's going here. And she said, but next year I may come back and get an assignment or something here. She's like, you know, I'd really like to put roots down. And it felt, I mean, I heard her saying, I miss home, you know, and what all that might entail. So
yeah, well, Chuck's always a slave to his ego, no matter who. But yeah, I think he didn't want her to see him with any kind of illness, with any kind of, you know, with any kind of Achilles heel.
Because it made him look weak to her? Do you think
that? Yes. Like I said, I think he's a slave to his ego, so any kind of weakness makes him feel bad, you know?
Yeah,
feel
weak. That makes sense.
Feel weaker than he should. Or we get the credits, and then we come back. We see Joe DeRosa, the Dr. Caldera, at the vet office. Jimmy's there with a goldfish for cover. And right away he gets told, you need to put this fish in a bigger bowl, Jacques Cousteau. Get that fish some space, Michelle.
Yeah, he didn't like that at all. He took his job very, very seriously. I don't like that either.
And Jimmy's looking for someone with a light touch. We'll find out who that is pretty soon.
Yep.
So Mesa Verde gets the hearings done. Looks like it went all pretty smooth and proper. And Kim admits the scam to Kevin and Paige about Chuck and Jimmy, how Jimmy set up Chuck. Basically, it might be bad publicity for them. But don't worry. I'll take the brunt of it, and I'll even bow out if it's best for this whole situation.
Okay, I didn't think she said that Jimmy did it. What I heard her say was that Chuck was accusing Jimmy of doing it they went with her.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, okay.
But I just still, want to make sure because Chuck and Jimmy are brothers, and she works with Jimmy, she's got an office space with him, that it might still be bad for them, but they don't want her to bow out. They stand up for her. And this guy, Kevin, the banker, even says, Chuck McGill is going to screw me out of the best lawyer I've ever had.
Right. Or right. Something. He says, well, yeah, he says the one thing that that I can't stand is a man not taking responsibility for what he does. So he obviously thinks that Chuck did it and he just doesn't want to take responsibility for it.
He's blaming Jimmy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even implies there might be more work to do in Colorado and Utah. So Kim's future looks really bright with this Mesa Verde connection.
Yep.
Something still bad is brewing for Kim. Unless she maybe just goes off and becomes a successful lawyer without Jimmy. Who knows?
Yeah. Overall, I feel like we're supposed to end this feeling good, you know, this episode. And I didn't. Did you?
No.
Okay. I'll tell you, Michelle,
I didn't like this episode too much. I read reviews of this episode before I watched it.
Right.
And so I was set up. I was thinking, wow, this is going to be really good. I can't wait to watch it. And when I watched it, I was let down. I didn't like it.
How come?
I didn't believe a lot of the courtroom stuff, for one. I didn't believe it was that big of a deal that Chuck had a battery in his pocket. He could have just said, yeah, you know, sometimes I feel it more than other, and I know he melted down, and that was kind of the point, that he slayed his own beast. He kind of blew it himself. But did he really blow it that badly with what he said in the courtroom? Did you feel that way?
I felt like that he kind of said that he had been out to get Jimmy for a long time.
And yeah, I guess. You have to stop him. If I can't stop him, you all have to stop. I guess it's kind of crazy, but I expected him to leap out of the chair and throttle Jimmy and wrestle him to the floor. You know, I don't know. I guess I expected more.
I thought the episode was really good. I'm going to tell you, though, as I was watching it, it was like a different TV series than last week. You know what I mean? I mean, like, last week, did we even see Chuck or Jimmy? It was all Gus and Don Lotto and Hector and everybody else, and it really felt almost like a different TV show to me, and I kept trying to, like, and I know that's silly, but I kept trying to relate these people in this. We had Mike last time, and it just feels like almost like two different series going on at the same time. So that was a little discombobulating to me.
Yeah, there's definitely two forks in this plot river for sure. This week they left out all those other guys. Yeah, so pretty interesting. All right, so the next scene, they start to prepare for Jimmy's hearing. Chuck and Howard suggests Chuck doesn't even need to be there, which would have been the best thing for him. Just don't even come here.
Right.
But Chuck wants to make sure the biggest penalty possible happens to Jimmy. So he needs to be there to do that. So
yeah, and he's so sanctimonious, you know? He's so pompous with it. That's why I don't think the law means that much to him. I think it's just how he can bend and twist it to suit his will is what it feels like.
Yeah. Well, he's kind of mastered the law. He's this big, important partner at a law firm. He's an owner, partner, and he's kind of super smart about it all. He's, you know, he's the master of his universe. And
right.
You can't let pretenders come into your universe if you're that big and important. And Jimmy's just a pretender in his eyes,
I guess.
So, but he's also his brother. That's why I asked, like, what do you do? How do you separate family from your legal obligation to do the right thing in your profession? I mean, if I asked myself, somebody asked me that question, would you turn in your own family if they did something illegal? That would be a hard question for me to answer. I don't know that I would turn in a brother.
Well, you know, I mean, and what's illegal? You know, there's a lot of laws. You know, if someone's speeding, are you going to call because they're going 55 and a 50? I mean, you know, you have to follow the law. No,
obviously not, but Chicago sunroof in front of kids.
I don't think Jimmy knew there was kids there, but that didn't matter. It was irresponsible, certainly. I mean, you know, that it was really, really bad, but it wasn't, he didn't do that intent. He did it intentionally, but not in front of children intentionally, but he just wasn't thinking. Yeah, that's bad though.
So in some interesting editing, Michelle, Jim and Kimmy get ready, Kim and Jimmy get ready for the hearing, and we hear the audio from the hearing while they're brushing their teeth and getting ready.
Yeah, how did you like their interaction with one another? That was pretty cool, wasn't
it?
Yeah,
they're kind of tight with each other. They're kind of close.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they're, you know, that look she gives them, right?
And they're living together, right? They're using toothbrushes together.
They're certainly staying together that night, if they're not.
Kim gives her opening statement, talks about the brothers' relationship being strained and broken, and how Jimmy is actually an asset to the legal community. He should not be disbarred.
Yep.
Kind of empty words, though. I mean, Jimmy probably should be disbarred for what he did, if you really think about it. While altering documents is not a cool thing for a lawyer to do and get away with.
No, absolutely not. I think he's kind of a picaresque hero in this situation, though, in that you pull for Jimmy because you know Chuck. But you're absolutely right. I mean, as far as what he did being bad, it's really bad. Not bad, though, toward the client, but bad toward the people he felt like were screwing over his girlfriend.
Right.
And it's just like Chuck even said. He said, Jimmy does things that are wrong that seem noble. And I think that's one of the problems that we have with this, you know, because when somebody does something that's wrong and obviously wrong, but it's for a noble cause, how do you weigh that differently?
I don't know. Yeah, you probably shouldn't, and especially in a court, you know, the wrong lawful thing here was in the law itself, the arena of law. So Howard gives his testimony, and he basically says he was there as Jimmy was breaking in and destroying the tape. Kim then cross-examines him, and she asks about Jimmy's history with Howard's firm and asks him about the nickname that they gave Jimmy, Charlie Hustle.
Yep.
Do you know who Charlie Hustle was in real life, Michelle?
Oh, I don't. Who?
He's Pete Rose. Pete Rose was the Charlie Hustle from baseball.
Oh, cool. I did not know that.
And he would have been right around, well, what time is this? Say it's 2000. Yeah, Pete Rose was a 70s. So he certainly would have been known to them by then. So it would have been a good nickname for Howard to give Jimmy as a young, 1992 young hustling mailroom kid.
That's pretty cool.
So Jimmy took the bar exam, got his license, but they didn't hire him because it appeared like it may look like nepotism within the firm.
Which is a joke, right?
Yeah.
I mean, with Hamlin, and McGill, that's a joke, right?
Well, yeah, so Kim says, well, who's the other Hamlin in Hamlin, McGill? And right. Howard says, my father.
Right.
And Kim doesn't even say another word about that. She just sits back and lets that settle in on the people in the courtroom.
Well, right, but she had asked him who was so against it. And, of course, it was Chuck.
Right. And, by the way, this isn't really even a courtroom, right? It's just some room that they're having a hearing in. It's not a trial. It's a hearing.
It's a bar hearing, I guess, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, they established Chuck was the one preventing Jimmy's hire. And Howard kind of smarmily hints that he could I could tell you a little bit more about his term at Davis and Maine if you want to hear about that.
Yeah.
And then Kim starts to talk about Chuck's condition and how Jimmy was supporting him. And she tries to get Chuck's mental illness / craziness, whatever you want to call it, involved in this hearing. And they all jump all over her for doing that. The three hearing supervisors don't want to let any of that come to light.
Right.
And then Howard steps down.
We have to remember that these people are the people that Chuck was talking about before, right? That he knew. And I can't remember what he said about them. But when Kimmy met him outside that deposition or whatever they were doing when they met with, what was her name, Miss Hunt, and they walked out after that, and Jimmy walked away right at the end of the last episode, and Chuck was telling her that he knew these people. You know, these people, that tape would get played because she said she was going to make a motion to just whatever it. And
right.
He's like, oh, it will get played. You know, you're going to find that they're lenient. And, I mean, don't you really get the feeling that these are Chuck's friends, right? Not Jimmy's friends.
Yeah, it's Chuck's home. It's his home stadium.
Right, exactly.
Kim and Jimmy are the visiting team here for sure.
So I was really surprised how fair they seemed in this because they really did. And I was not expecting that.
So Kim does this fake out again when Chuck's attorney wants to play the recording. She kind of steps up again. I object to this. And they kind of say, look, we already agreed this is admissible. So they're going to play it. They wheel in the tape machine, the 2002 tape machine.
Right. Can we talk for just a minute, though, about this? Because Howard was right? If Chuck hadn't had his episodes, then that paperwork would have been where it should have been and been protected. So Chuck has a little bit of culpability in the fact that this stuff wasn't in an area that I'm not excusing Jimmy, but I'm just saying it's obviously not a safe place the way Chuck had it for numerous reasons. One being that he sets, you know, gas lanterns on top of papers.
Right.
But for another, you know, reason is because he could be, you know, schmoozed and somebody could come in and do whatever they wanted to with it.
Or he could have a heart attack and knock over a Coleman lantern. I mean, anything. Yeah. I think Howard's fed up with Chuck. He's sick of him.
I think so, too. And I didn't realize how much Howard liked Jimmy. I thought that was kind of cool to see. I mean, I think he dislikes him, too. But it was cool that he said some nice stuff about him, I thought.
I think we've kind of learned in past episodes that Howard is really the good guy, appearing to be the evil antagonist. He's really the good guy. He's going to show up as the good guy. He paid Kim's law school charges, you know, which had to be super expensive.
Oh, can you imagine?
He's under Chuck's thumb as much as anyone else. He's got a kind of kowtow to him, but he does kind of do stuff behind his back, and he acts smarmy to look good to Chuck, but I think he really kind of hates Chuck and does like Jim and Kimmy. Kimmy and Jim. Jimmy and Kim, damn it. God. Anyway, they get ready to play this tape, and Jimmy turns around and asks Francesca a question. And she tells him the flight's been delayed 40 minutes. And Jimmy steals a little bit more time by asking a moment to review.
Right, they do that a couple times.
We don't know what the delay of the flight means at this point, but we're going to find out. And Chuck, we see practicing his testimony in some back room somewhere. I guess maybe even his house. Does he take the car from his house or some room somewhere?
I couldn't tell.
Dark room. But
yeah.
He's practicing. I love my brother, but the law is too important. So he's really committed to this.
Yeah, that was disgusting. That was hard to watch. I really disliked that. He was preparing a statement to make it sound as good as he could. That's when my idea formed about him, that this is just a way for him to manipulate everything to get Jimmy. And I just, you know, it was disgusting.
I think so, but I also think a lawyer is also an actor. Every lawyer in real life is an actor in front of a jury, essentially, to convince them to think a certain way. So I could see them practicing, and I don't know. It's not just a sin that Chuck is committing. I think it's kind of a thing that lawyers probably do to be the best they can for the audience they're playing in front of.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see the theater in it, and I agree with that. But, and we've even seen Jimmy do it, I think, before. At the very beginning, I remember him walking around, you know, saying stuff. But it wasn't anything as bad as this. I love my brother. And then he'd stop and say it in a different way to make it sound more believable, you know, or yeah. More touching. And something about that just really rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, I guess you would think one wouldn't rehearse that line, that it comes out genuine or not, just on its own emotional weight.
Well, no. I mean, I could totally understand going over what you wanted to say, but going over, you know, the way you say that you love somebody, I mean, I don't know that he loves him. I don't think he certainly loves him in any kind of sane way.
So they play the tape, and on the tape, Jimmy's angry about Kim getting dissed, how he committed the crime, quote-unquote crime, to help her out. And we hear Howard revealing that he had just confessed. Howard or Chuck, can't remember which, but kind of caught. Jimmy's caught on this tape having just confessed.
Yeah.
And then they shut down the power in the room, and Chuck's going to show up. They collect everybody's phones. The guy even takes the clock off the wall.
Yeah. Did you notice, though, when they were playing that tape, it seemed like that the three judge people were really uncomfortable after what they heard, because it almost seemed, even though the words were really bad, what Jimmy was saying, it almost seemed like he loved his brother. He's like, yeah, I know I confessed to that, but you feel better, right?
Now, yeah, come on, let's get I think Kim did a good job of portraying this as a brother versus brother. And Jimmy is just helping his brother. He's trying to help his brother.
Right.
And Chuck is using his power to hurt his brother. I think anyone who had to sit through that with any type of authority or supervision over it would look like, dudes, can't you just shake hands and get along? You're brothers, right? I mean, they must see this in courtrooms. Real judges and real people must see this happen. And families get in lawsuits with each other. It must really suck.
Right. I really liked seeing them looking uncomfortable with that, because it felt genuine to me, because it was uncomfortable to hear how much Chuck or Jimmy cared about Chuck, and then to know what Chuck was doing to get Jimmy to say that.
So Chuck pulls up in his Jaguar and bumps into Huell on the stairway going into the room, and
yep,
his testimony starts. They ask him why he made the secret tape, and he says to catch Jimmy and reveal his scam, and to ruin Mesa Verde. And Jimmy can be quite clever, you know, he's pretty convincing. It looks like things are kind of going in Chuck's direction here. And Chuck admits he recorded the confession because he didn't have real evidence, but it must be real because Jimmy came in and he wanted to destroy the tape, so it must be really valuable and damaging to Jimmy, so it must reveal what was really true.
And that's actually a pretty good point.
Yeah, and he says, I was exaggerating my disease to extract the truth. And then he starts to tell everybody what his disease is. It's acute allergy to electromagnetism. Even people have peanut allergies, and they didn't believe they were real. Michelle, that made me think of you, Michelle. Your seafood and peanut allergy.
I do not have a peanut allergy.
I know, but I think people with peanut allergies are a lot like Chuck.
Mike allergies. Oh my gosh, they are so real. You can't do that.
Yeah, but there are people that have like cleanliness allergies or fears of like germs of shaking hands or even touching other people.
That's not an allergy. An allergy, particularly when you're talking about like these peanut allergies and those kind of allergies, they're usually anaphylactic, which means your throat will literally close whenever you're exposed to peanut products. And they're very, very serious.
Yeah, of course they are.
They are.
Well, so is electromagnetism, man. Magnetism.
Well, that is not the same thing.
All right, well, Chuck ties it into mysterious illnesses like AIDS, and, you know, he's kind of using what he thinks is important with topical illnesses at the time. If you think about 2002, AIDS was probably the scariest at that point in its history.
Yeah, I would agree.
So the lawyer says, do you hate your brother? And Chuck says, nope, I love my brother, but he shouldn't be a lawyer. I did what I did to protect something I hold sacred. And then he uses, and then he's smarmy again. He's just like, Ted Kaczynski's brother loved him, too.
Oh, I know. He said something about Ted Kaczynski's brother. You know, well, he probably, you know, loved his brother. And it's like, bad.
So Kim cross-examines Chuck, but first consults a little bit with Jimmy. And this is where Rebecca comes in.
Yep.
And right away, Chuck needs a break. He's like, holy moly, I didn't expect this.
Okay, so this was just to throw him off, right? Because really, she didn't do anything other than that. And she wasn't even there for the first part of it. She was only there for Kim's part of it.
Yeah, all the people are in the reviews are relating this scene to the scene in The Godfather 2 when the cousin of the guy or the brother of the guy comes in from Europe and the guy isn't ready to testify in court and sees his brother sitting in the audience of the courtroom.
So it's just like to throw you off.
And that, you know, they're trying to drive him a little crazy to go flip his lid, and this is certainly adding to that stress that Chuck feels.
Right.
So during this 15-minute break, Chuck goes up and greets Rebecca. He's surprised to see her. And Jimmy has told her about his illness, air quote, unquote, illness, and she's there because of his illness, and she knew nothing about this.
And Jimmy even sent her pictures, so that was, you know, part of what Mike was doing, of course, getting the pictures for the case, but getting them for her, too.
Pretty brilliant setup by Jimmy, even though it is pretty down and dirty.
Yeah, it's I didn't really get how that would throw him off so much, except that I guess he would be careful what he said with her there, although he didn't. I don't know, just to throw him off, I guess.
Well, they're sitting in a darkened courtroom with no phones or electricity, and he's successfully lied his way out of the first time that she saw this. But now Jimmy's shown all these pictures, and this is something he lives his life completely submerged in. And she knows totally all about it now. And now they're sitting in a pretty important, this isn't in a waiting room somewhere. This is like a legal hearing. And he's got everybody kowtowing to his need to have no electricity anywhere, no lights on. It does look pretty bad for Chuck with her seeing
this. It does. But she offered to leave. She said, you seem uncomfortable, I'll leave. But of course, I think his feelings for her are so strong that he would rather have her there even though the uncomfortable situation.
He wants her to see the fall of Jimmy. This is more hate towards, I mean, this is building up more and more hate towards Chuck. Like, I want you to see the fall of Jimmy, I think. Stay here and watch what's going to happen. You're going to see me put Jimmy in his place.
Yeah, you're right, because he says that she's been sold a bill of goods, and he wants her to see what's what. So, yeah, you're right.
So Jimmy and Kim have vending machine snacks, and Kim says she's going to hate you when this is over, and Jimmy just says, yep.
And what do you think Kim thought Rebecca was going to be? Because she's like, that is not what I expected. That was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah, you wouldn't put a nice, sane, productive, successful woman with Chuck. Chuck's a kook, man. I mean, she's attractive and together. Do you think Chuck would have had an ex-wife like that?
Well, no. That's not what I would have expected either, I don't guess. But I just kind of wondered what she felt and what she did expect.
Sometimes you don't have to know what you expect. You just know that you didn't expect what you saw.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So now Jimmy cross-examines Chuck and asks him about the tape. He gets Chuck to describe how he recorded the tape, how it was he had discomfort with using electricity and using the recording and all that. And Chuck starts to unravel here. His armor starts to crack a little bit. He says, yeah, yeah, I didn't have to worry about it. It was under the space blanket.
Right.
And then describes his house with all the Mylar sheets and space blankets. And Jimmy just gets him to reveal all this stuff. You know, he says, how did you know your provocation would work? And kind of Jimmy unravels himself from this by saying, I said what I said to talk you down. I said things to you to make you feel better.
I thought that was a great point. I wasn't expecting him to lie like that, but I thought that was a great point. He said, look at how much trouble you went to entrap me. You did all this to entrap me, which is what Chuck essentially said he did. Not entrap, but went to all that trouble to get him to confess what he did. And Jimmy said, so why wouldn't I go to the same amount of trouble just to say something to you to make you feel better when I thought you really felt that bad? I thought that was a great point.
Yeah, and then Chuck actually says, well, you may say that, but I was playing up my condition. And right. My house is normal, usually. But that trips up when Jimmy starts showing pictures of the house and the wires and the camp stoves, and it's essentially Mike's pictures.
Right. Right. And then he goes over to when his symptoms first started, which was when he got divorced.
Yeah. So it's funny. So they, you know, Chuck lied to me to make me admit the truth, and I lied to him to make him feel better is essentially right. What Jimmy says.
Right. And that's a great argument.
It's essentially the truth.
Yeah, but he didn't really lie to him to make him feel better. He told him the truth to make him feel better. Jimmy did.
Right.
But Chuck lied to him. But it was a great argument that if Chuck can go to this length to, you know, lie to me, then I went to that to a length to lie to him just to make him feel better.
This is where Jimmy gets Chuck to admit that the illness came after the split with Rebecca.
Right.
So I think that's how we know that part of the timing. And Chuck says, we're on good terms. We are on good terms. And turns to Rebecca and says, I hid my illness before, but I wanted you not to think less of me. So that's probably honest and true.
Yeah.
And then Jimmy starts to attack here. He brings up other diseases, like, would you have told Rebecca if you had cancer? You know, and gets Chuck to start to describe his interpretation of this electro illness. Does he have pain and stuff?
Right.
So it starts to unravel for Chuck here. Jimmy says, does it hurt now? And then sitting in this room, and Chuck kind of says, I can handle this. And electricity's far away. And this is where Jimmy pulls out the aha moment, pulls out his phone, but no battery is in it. See, now this is where, Michelle, I don't think the court people would have let Jimmy get away with all this stuff. Because he is kind of off, he's Perry Masoning it up here, he's very dramatic. Would you let him pull out the phone if you were in charge and show that there's no battery, but the battery is in Chuck's pocket? I mean, it's kind of proving that Chuck's right, that Jimmy's deceiving, right? He's snuck a battery into Chuck's pocket.
Well, yeah, but it's the same thing again. You know, he's deceiving to show that Chuck's deceiving.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, yeah, I completely get what you're saying about how they would stop that. Because on my second watch, I thought, okay, they might would have said, okay, you had the cell phone in here. You're just trying to mess with his head. Now this stops here. But I think they were fascinated at the same time.
I'm sure.
With Chuck's reaction and what Chuck was going to do. Because I don't think anybody believed Chuck, right? They go to all this trouble to enable this illness with him. And they even brought up, Jimmy even brought up, he said, the doctor who gave me, was it guardianship or something over you? Did he diagnose you with this? You know, and that's when Chuck was like, well, no. You know, I mean, he's never been diagnosed with anything even. And I don't know. You know, I mean, I think that the people watching were just, they scolded. But at the same time, Jimmy kept going. And it was really just, you know, maybe a minute of time. So
I don't know. They had warned him a couple times. Like, they told him to be careful. We'll give you a little bit of levity, but be careful. Be careful what you do. And they also earlier in this setting had told Jimmy or somebody, this is not about Chuck. This is about James McGill. Like, but Chuck was the one on trial here all of a sudden. It was kind of a flipped case.
But I think what was so funny, though, is that when Jimmy laid the phone out there, Chuck, it was neat because I really did like that. And I think that's probably what sucked everybody else in, too, was when Jimmy said, if you can feel the electricity, the pain from the electricity, where do you feel it more from? Is it coming from behind you? Is it coming from over here? Is it coming from over here? Where do you feel it? And then Chuck's like, do you have something in your pocket? So, I mean, that was enthralling, right? We all wanted to know. And then when Jimmy said yes, and he took it out and laid it down, everybody's like, no, no, you know. And then Chuck goes, wait, you know. So everybody kind of waited, and he picked it up and felt the weight of it and realized the battery wasn't in it and took the back off. And then he kind of precipitated that going on, I think, by going, there was no battery in it. That's why I'm not feeling anything, you know. And that made Jimmy look bad, and Jimmy even kind of drops his head like, oh, you know, it didn't work and all this kind of stuff. And then the battery in the pocket thing. That then as soon as Chuck touches, he tosses.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that was dramatic effect. Because, like, if Chuck touches the phone and he's like, ooh, it hurts, Jimmy would have just opened it then and said, well, there's no battery in it. What do you mean it hurts? And then he would have said, go reach in your pocket and hand me the battery. You know, he could have pulled it off either way whether Chuck had actually pretended or opened it. Either way,
absolutely.
I think he had him.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, absolutely. But the way Chuck was like, I outsmarted you, Jimmy. There is no battery in this. And then he sits there smugly. And I think that might be why they let him continue on with the whole, we'll check in your pocket. Because Chuck had kind of almost given him permission at that point. He didn't throw the phone or, you know, go out or anything. He touches it and kind of allows it to go on, which makes Jimmy look like a big jerk, right? And then we find out.
So you think all these legal people are kind of thinking, oh, okay, asshole, you're pulling all this on Jimmy, but you're also pulling it all on us, all this stupid stuff we have to, all these hoops we got to jump through, and it's not even really real? What the hell?
I don't really think anybody's, I mean, that's not the impression I'm getting. I'm getting pity for his mental illness, which is what I think pissed Chuck off so bad. That is that's what he doesn't want. That's what I think he doesn't want from Rebecca, is like pity. He believes this. He believes he has this. This is not, he's not schmoozing people. He's not doing this to a good end for himself. And there's no positive reason he's doing this. This is a mental illness on his part. And the last thing he wants is pity, or for people to think that something, that's like his one holdout. He even made a point. He said, physically I'm in pain, but mentally I'm very lucid.
Yeah.
So I think that's his one holdout, is how smart he is. And I think that's why he's so frustrated over what happened with the numbers being transposed, and why he just feels like he couldn't, because he is so sure of himself and his intellect.
You know, all this can't be doing much good for HHM either. Poor Howard sitting there, like, seeing his whole law firm go down the drain. Like, here's the master of the universe, leader of HHM, and here's Howard protecting and supporting him, and now he looks like a raving lunatic.
Yeah, he does.
What are the clients of HHM going to think when they hear about this, that the master lawyer is like some crazy loon?
Well, right. Some and not just somebody who's really like got a mental illness, but somebody who's also taking stuff home. I mean, if you had some kind of, you know, big deal, legal stuff, would you want to take your stuff to someplace like that? Where this guy's taking this stuff to his house and right. he's not competent?
Right, and somebody else managed to get pictures of everything inside the house. Yeah, it's compromised for sure. So Chuck rants and raves. He goes into how Jimmy stole from his dad's store and he pooped through the sunroof and all the crazy stuff Jimmy did. And Rebecca's understandably appalled by it. The whole courtroom or the whole whatever room is appalled by what Chuck appears to be doing to himself here.
Yep.
And I think the whole world now, the audience and everybody, the show universe and the audience on TV sees things the way that we always have known them, is that Jimmy is maybe a little scandalous, but Chuck is pretty crazy. There's no secrets anymore about that.
No, there is no questions about whether or not he really does have something going on or whether... this is all just in his mind. There's no question anymore.
And that's the end of 305, Michelle.
I know.
So if you missed your pals from the other half of the fork or the river, they're coming up fast in the next episode. Did you watch it? The next ones?
I did. Yep.
Yeah. What did you see?
Well, I just saw the Los Pollos Hermanos truck. I saw Howard telling Chuck that he's at a crossroads. Saw Rebecca saying that he got what he wanted, now it's time to do what's right. And then we hear somebody say the words, Saul Goodman.
That's Kim.
Was it Kim?
Yeah.
This is 3 years in, 3 seasons in before we're hearing this name. It was like music to my ears, right?
Yeah, and she's saying it in a very weird inflection, like, Saul Goodman.
Right.
Like, that's kind of clever, but... I don't know if I want to be messing with that. Like, it's kind of a questioning... She's admiring it in a questioning way. A very interesting way that her inflection was. So there's actually another next on where Crazy Eight comes in, visits Hector in the shop, in the ice cream store, or the whatever that Mexican store is, where Hector and Nacho get their cash from their dealers. Crazy Eight comes in and delivers the cash to Nacho and says, one of my new guys got seen by a cruiser and dumped his cash and ran. So we may see another new guy. I don't know who that is.
Well, that'd be good.
And so his drop is light. This Crazy Eight doesn't have as much money as he should to give to Nacho. And when Crazy Eight leaves, because Nacho kind of says, okay, you make it up next week, Hector says to Nacho, who works for who? And Nacho's all flustered. Well, we already know Nacho hates Hector.
Everybody hates Hector.
So
who likes Hector?
I don't know. His nurse? The Ouija board nurse?
I seriously doubt it.
She probably doesn't like him either, huh? And then I saw some other stuff. I saw Tuco holding a gun on Nacho. I saw Jimmy with his whole... Damon Lindelof Jr. film crew in the car with him. That was right before Rebecca said, you got what you wanted, now it's time to do what's right. That has to be to Jimmy, right? Who is she saying that to? Can't be to Chuck, because Chuck didn't get what he wanted.
How do we know? That's what I was going to ask you. Do you think this is going to end? Do you think this is going to go in Chuck's favor or in Jimmy's favor?
Well, they make it certainly implied that it's in Jimmy's favor. It's really not either of their favor. It just brings Chuck down.
Well, but then that would be in Jimmy's favor because Chuck's trying to get Jimmy disbarred. So do you think Jimmy's going to get disbarred over this?
I don't think this dismisses Jimmy from his charges. That's why I'm saying this whole scene was like, it makes Chuck look really bad, but it doesn't do anything to vindicate Jimmy.
Well, the only thing that it does in my mind is throw up true suspicion over whether Jimmy actually did anything or whether he was just trying to humor Chuck. That's all.
Yeah, maybe.
And there is no proof that he did that. So that he transposed the numbers. We all know it like it's a fact, but they, you know, nobody else knows this except for Kim. Nobody else knows this. But I don't know that just because Chuck is in the know with these people, like you said, this is his crowd, that this doesn't go in Chuck's favor anyway, and Jimmy doesn't get disbarred anyway. And then that would be Rebecca saying maybe to Chuck that he got what he wanted, and now it's time to do what's right.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. You got Jimmy disbarred, now you got to do what's right.
But maybe not. You could be right, certainly, too, that she could be talking to Jimmy about, you know, now you have to do what's right.
What,
but I don't know.
What would Jimmy do that's right? What does he need to do that's right in Rebecca's eyes? Resign from the law, or I think it's Chuck. I think you're right, Michelle. It's Chuck. You got what you wanted. Now it's time to do what's right. Get yourself committed. Get yourself help. Get yourself therapy.
Well, and Howard also telling Chuck that he's at a crossroads. So I don't know. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see, because I think they left it at such a high note for Jimmy that, you know, or Jimmy's career, that we all felt like, okay, Jimmy skated through this, but I'm not sure he did.
No, and that's maybe why he has to become Saul Goodman, and that's why Kim saying, Saul Goodman.
Right.
That could be interesting. I don't know if I would like it, but it's clever. so I don't know. We'll see. What's the title here next week?
Off-brand.
Off-brand? Is that like Jimmy McGill is off-brand now and he's Saul Goodman?
Maybe. Maybe. Saul Goodman's off-brand Jimmy McGill. I don't know.
All right, Michelle. Well, I hope you can join me for that episode, 306.
Absolutely.
Until then, how do people reach you?
On Twitter, I'm at Michelle from TN.
And I'm at Scathing Tweets. So send us some texts and let us know what's up, or text or tweets. Yeah. And West Coast Project is our website. If you ever want to just send an email or just look at the, you can put comments in the forums there. So.
Yeah.
All right, Michelle. Absolutely. So people go to Michelle's Tribal Rant and listen to all their good stuff, and we'll talk to you next week here on West Coast Project.
Okay, Mike. Talk to you then.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.